And unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. This morning I'm still talking about the precepts and commentary that go with those precepts with the Bodhisattva ceremony, Riyaka Fasats. This morning I want to talk about the eighth precept, which is, I vow not to be avaricious. Another translation is, not begrudging the bestowal of the Dharma. And the commentary is, one phrase, one verse, that is the 10,000 things, and 100 grasses. One Dharma, one realization, is all Buddhas and ancestors. Therefore, from the beginning, there has been no stinginess at all. So let's look at the first part of this, the first translation of the precept itself, which is, I vow not to be avaricious. So this vowing not to be avaricious refers to a time when we are greedy, feel like we are feeling greedy, or when we are withholding something in the material realm. Before I give this example, I want to say that for those who were present for this conversation, the person to whom I'm speaking about has given me permission to talk about this. So recently, we had a conversation, a student and I and some other people. This person has a few fruit trees in their front yard, and those trees are easily accessible from the street. And right now, those trees are blooming with fruit, and there are people who are coming and taking that fruit without asking permission. And this person, who's a student at Ocean Gate, was not happy about that. So I asked them, I said, is there enough fruit for you? And they said, mostly, but when it isn't, I get it from my neighbor's tree. Yet, they were still unhappy about these people who were just taking fruit and not asking for permission. So a key tenet of our practice is to look to our own minds as the source of our suffering, not the actions of other people, but to look at our own mind. In this case, if we're feeling possessive about something that we have that can be shared without it harming us, and we want to keep it for ourselves or put conditions upon our generosity, and we're feeling ill will with others, are suffering because we can't control a situation, then we need to look at our own response to alleviate our suffering. The other person is not going to alleviate our suffering. We need to look at our own mind. So it's not about changing someone else. Now, I'll say I really love this example. I couldn't think of another example that I thought was as good as this example. It's the kind of situation I think that we can all relate to and that we've all had this experience. So I can completely understand wanting to control our environment, wanting to, at the very least, have people come and ask us for permission to take fruit off a tree in our yard. I can understand being possessive about something that we believe should be ours. We say to ourselves, how can it be okay for someone to take fruit off my tree without asking? Are they totally clueless? Well, yes, perhaps they are. But in this case, it's not their cluelessness that matters. It's our practice life that matters, not the other person's. If we hold on to our resentment or our fear that others will take something that we value, then we become resentful. And in extreme cases, maybe we become a little paranoid about the whole thing. And this is suffering. So if we're watching out the window in order to catch someone taking our fruit, are we being or we are being confrontational with people, this is creating suffering for them and probably more suffering for ourselves. The Buddha said, and I'm paraphrasing this, if your path is strewn with stones, don't try to pick up all the stones. Put on a pair of shoes. This is a similar situation. When we are suffering, don't try to change everything around us. Work with our own suffering. This is putting on a pair of shoes. So making shoes is our practice. If we try to create a world in which every path or every situation is to our liking, then we are bound to suffer. Just the very fact of impermanence is going to be a perpetual problem for us if we're trying to keep everything the same, and that sameness is everything that we want to happen. So when we feel strong negative emotions, this is a signal to stop and examine what's going on in our mind. So I would suggest, if possible, in a situation where you don't have to or don't need to do something about it right then and there, to let go of trying to control the situation until your emotional response cools and you are able to cultivate some equanimity and consult with your understanding of practice. An example that's a little closer to home for me is a few months ago, the woman who lived across the street from us died, and her house went on the market. We live in a mobile home park, and the etiquette is not to park in front of another person's house. So when our neighbor's house went on sale, all the real estate agents and their clients were parking in front of our house. Jocko and I were both bothered by this. At one point, we spoke to one of the people parking in front of the house, and the person was defensive and got angry. Jocko and I immediately decided that we would no longer say anything about the parking because we were getting upset and it was upsetting other people. I think this is our practice. You know, we're not always going to be able to, if you will, do the right thing immediately. Sometimes we have to think about it. Sometimes we have to be in the middle of a situation and realize, oh my gosh, this is suffering. This is creating suffering for others. It's time to let go. It's time to step away from this. It's time to cool our emotions and let go of our possessiveness. In our case, in this particular example of the street in front of our house. So from a Buddhist perspective, this makes sense to just slow down and let things unfold as they will. And forget about it. Just forget about it. Go about your business. Do something else. Take a deep breath. Calm your mind and body. Go run an errand. Go do some work somewhere else in the house. All of these practices are an antidote to your mind's suffering. And then as for the fruit trees in the parking, the antidote is the antidote to being possessive is to cultivate generosity. And there might be a step in there between those two. You feel arising in yourself a sense of possessiveness. You realize that it's creating suffering for yourself. So at the very least, you're alleviating your own suffering by doing this practice. You feel suffering. You feel your anxiety. You feel your desire to want to control. You feel your frustration. You feel like you want to do something right now. The practice is to just chill. The practice is to look to your own mind and see your own suffering and your own agitation and make an attempt to calm that agitation. And then, as that happens, you can transform that sense of possessiveness into generosity. Just by doing nothing, you are already creating a spaciousness around the problem and unbeknownst probably to the other person, you are exhibiting and acting in a generous way. So all of these situations that arise for us like this, in all of these situations, we are being given the chance to practice what we study. This is where we practice. We can study on the Yazu. We can have an intellectual understanding of Buddhism till the cows come home. But if we don't look at our own mind and work with our own suffering and the suffering that we create for others, we're not practicing. We're reading about Buddhism. So this is our practice. And our resistance to doing the practice, or in this case, resistance to being generous, becomes a koan. Is this a situation where I can let go and just be generous? Can I have sympathetic joy for the person who gets that piece of fruit? Or the person who has a more convenient parking space by parking in front of my house? This becomes our koan. The koan is not how can I get them to stop doing what they're doing. The koan is how can I work on my own practice, my own understanding of Buddhism in this moment. This becomes our koan. It's not a time to go outside and confront or educate the person who we are considering to be the cause of our suffering. And so when we appropriately cultivate generosity, when it's hard for us, then we can really grapple with and find peace of mind. That is what I mean when I say you must build your practice muscles on easy things so that when the really tough stuff happens in your life, sickness, death, foreclosure, loss of jobs, when those really tough things come into our lives, that we have put deep effort into dealing with the smaller things at the time that they arise so that we're ready for something that may come along. And it will, because in this human life, these things happen. It doesn't just go along based on whatever plans we might have. So it may not seem easy, but you have to keep working on it with your mind. You have to keep working on your mind. And that's okay. That's the only way that transformation happens. We have to work at it. We have to keep coming back and coming back and coming back to our practice. Maybe one of the greatest assets in practice is tenacity. So this is what I would say is the relative teaching of this precept. Another way to talk about the precept is how it arises from our understanding of the interconnectedness of the working and manifestation of our world. So from this perspective, we have the second translation of this precept, not begrudging the bestowal of the Dharma. So this interpretation goes beyond the question of material possessiveness or withholding, and also addresses the meaning of the word Dharma. Since the word Dharma means the teaching, it has a capital D, or it's also translated as the law. But I would say in this case for us, it is the law, the causal, conditional, interconnected law of the world's functioning. And when we deny this interbeing of self and other, then we're essentially denying the Dharma. We're denying that the Dharma is our guide, and we're denying its power of transformation to ourselves and others. Essentially, we are creating and recreating suffering. We're doing this through an attachment to and an unwillingness to work with our small or possessive mind in the case of this precept. So if we talk about being avaricious, we're talking about a kind of drive for gain beyond what one really needs. So an example of this would be our relationship to the environment is avaricious. We use much more than we actually need. And this greed for more convenience, for more stuff, or more bigger things, is avaricious, both in the sense of misusing and withholding specific things, so that would be the first meaning of the precepts. But it's also not acknowledging, therefore withholding, the earth's function as the Dharma. Dharma is the world, as Dogen says in Uji, is the world worlding the world itself. And this is the basis of our practice. By ignoring this essential activity, or ignoring this essential nature of our experience, our essential nature, we are withholding the Dharma. We are withholding the truth of inner being, interconnectedness. If someone says to you, my way or the highway, or if you don't believe what I believe, so then I say you are worthless, this is withholding the Dharma. Why? When we violate the earth, for example, we are messing with the totality of reality. We are withholding the Dharma because we do not practice it or show it. We cannot manifest our practice without manifesting the Dharma. Again, having an intellectual understanding of this is not enough. We have to make our best effort in every moment to manifest this understanding that we're all in this together, all of us. So another way that we hold on to the teaching is when we use the teaching for our own gain. Or we have a false sense that we don't have to practice when teachings make us uncomfortable. This is a kind of hoarding in the sense that we hold dear to the small self. And by holding on to this small self, because, oh, it's a little hard, I don't feel like doing it today, it's kind of a pain in the, you know, whatever, to have to go out there and have to do this practice, to have to make this effort in this moment to curb my desire to control things. When we do that, we are withholding the teachings from ourselves and we are avoiding the hard work of transformation. The next part of the commentary is one phrase, one verse. This is the 10,000 things and the 100 grasses. One Dharma, one realization is all Buddhas and ancestors. So I'll repeat that. One phrase, one verse. That is the 10,000 things and 100 grasses. One Dharma, one realization is all Buddhas and ancestors. So this sentence reiterates the teachings that there is one mandala of causal functioning, our one great precept of enacting the causal relationships we all share. This is the one great precept. This is the basis of all precepts. In this relationship, each thing, and here we talk about thing as a dharma and using a small d, each thing is all things, big D dharma, teachings are the law. One phrase, one verse, that is the 10,000 dharmas. That would be things, the 10,000 things, or the 100 grasses. So these are poetic ways to say, to speak about all the particular things that make up the world. We say they are the 10,000 dharmas or the 100 grasses. And it says, is all Buddhas and ancestors. This means that the shovel that you use to plant your garden is a Buddha. The car you drive is a Buddha. The food you eat is a Buddha. It is an ancestor. The person who takes fruit from your tree or parks in front of my house is a Buddha and an ancestor. How do we treat such wondrous beings? Enacting this teaching, the commentary continues. And the commentary says that when we can do this, when we start to see the whole world as Buddha nature itself functioning, make that our koan, how do we respond that way in each moment in these difficult, hard, rubber meets the road moments of our life, moment after moment after moment, situation after situation, person after person. This, if we can apply the Buddha Dharma, if we can see the true functioning of the world itself and our place in it, this is enacting the teaching. And this results in generosity, not greed. And that's why the next line is, therefore, from the beginning, because this, we say in Buddhism, there is no beginning and no end. From the very beginning of all of this functioning, from the very beginning, there has been no stinginess at all. Even in the midst of your stinginess, there is still no stinginess at all. So again, I ask you, how do we treat this wondrous being, this shovel, this person, this situation? If we see that we are one phrase and one verse of a poem of life, so we are one phrase, one verse of this poem called life, and we know that we are part of a dialogue. We're not just one voice. We're not one authority. Then if we understand that, we know our true situation within the context of the 10,000 things. We are one verse, one phrase, implies that this verse is part of a larger body of work. One verse, one phrase, part of a larger body of work. And this one phrase means there is more to this sentence. There is more to this poem. And this more is the total functioning of the world together. With this one verse and one phrase makes up the total functioning. This total functioning is the one verse and the one phrase, and the one verse and the one phrase simultaneously is the total function. They are not different. The Dharma is for everyone. Is enacted by the whole world, making the world. This is Dogen and Skyoji, continuous practice. Everything is practicing. Everything is practice. So this is the world that we share with others. When we can't enact this truth, we are withholding the Dharma, because we are not practicing when we could be practicing. By the way, this doesn't have to be grim. This doesn't have to be some kind of feeling like you're on the Bhutan death march or, crawling across the desert on your knees. There's fun in here. You can still watch TV. You can still have cake on your birthday. We just need to pay attention. We just need to pay attention. So part of paying attention means that we acknowledge that the shovel, the situation, and the person are all Buddha Dharma. We are all Buddha Dharma. And then when we see this, we know how to begin to enact these teachings. And this is, there has been no stinginess at all. How can there be stinginess? Since it is the right hand giving to the left hand. It is the fingers working as one hand. When we realize this, we cannot withhold. Now, we may set boundaries, but they're not based on possessiveness or greed. So this is important. It's not saying that we don't set boundaries, but what are we thinking? What are we feeling? How are we responding? What is our mind caught in? So we want to find equanimity and stability before we start setting boundaries. So if we look at something like COVID, many countries do not have vaccines. For more fortunate countries, to withhold vaccines is avaricious. Sharing and helping other nations is no stinginess at all, because it recognizes that all of the 10,000 things are one phrase, one verse of this larger poem, this larger text, this larger world, this total functioning. If we look at the four Brahma Viharas, and Brahma Vihara is, I'm translating this as the dwelling place of our Buddha mind. The dwelling place of our Buddha mind. Where does our Buddha mind dwell? How does our Buddha mind see this world? How do we act on our life? And the four Brahma Viharas are sympathetic joy, or mudita, loving kindness, metta, compassion, karuna, and equanimity, upekkha. So you've probably heard of these. So all four of these Brahma Viharas are about not withholding. Loving kindness is born from knowing that we are one family. Compassion is knowing the kinship of that family and responding to that suffering. Equanimity is keeping our balance, which in turn is the gift of stability to everyone, including ourselves. And sympathetic joy is a genuine outpouring of generosity towards one who has received good fortune. So these four qualities, or any of the qualities that we talk about in Buddhism, because goodness gracious, we all know that there are lists upon lists upon lists. These qualities cannot be cultivated or enacted without the understanding that from the very beginning, we are one activity. One finger on the hand of reality's function. We are family, as persons, as things, as situations, as beginningless time, as endless cause and effect, and as effort in practice. The whole world is making effort in practice. If it weren't for the whole world's effort, we would not be alive. There would be no life. So the whole world is sustaining us. Can we sustain the whole world in each moment, moment by moment of our life? What does that mean? So we make effort, and as effort in practice, this beginningless time, endless cause and effect, this effort that we make in practice, all of this results in this one world system, or the 10,000 things in the 100 grasses. So please, don't withhold your generous spirit towards others. I know all of us have this generous spirit because this is Buddha nature. No one is devoid of Buddha nature. I would say that we do this by avoiding classifying and denigrating others and try to find common ground. How we do this is sometimes difficult, because even in understanding the Buddha's teaching, it is still not clear how we should respond in every situation. We get confused, can't figure it out. This understanding is our life's work as foolish human beings on this Buddhist path. It's our life's work, acknowledging and understanding at the same time that sometimes we're like so stupid. Our wisdom flies out the window. And yet, we never stop being Buddha nature. We never are separate from the totality of this continuous practice of the world worlding itself. We are still the finger on the hand of reality. We are still one verse, one sentence, one being, as the totality of all of life functioning. So how we understand this, how we work with this, this is our Buddhist path, our Buddhist practice. But here, this is clear, pretty clear to me. If we are entrenched in our ideas, if we are unwilling to question our opinions, if we're caught in holding on to things or withholding, there is work that we need to do. Thank you very much.